Ms. Gowan?
Yeah.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Here.
Dr. Rubin?
Here.
We have quorum.
We're on 5E, and this would be case number 20-141, and that would be, is Dr. Drobot still there?
Yeah, Drobot's still there.
Okay. Dale, could you give us a refresher on that?
Yes. Board members, on May 14th, the board reviewed information to determine it would be appropriate to see additional charting regarding respondents' Arizona patients over the next few months to see if there's actual improvement in charting. The board voted to continue the case for 90 days for further investigation, giving the board staff the ability to obtain 4 additional charts for board review. The following charts were submitted by respondent on July 23rd, 2020. And I do have a summary of the chart breakdown review in your packet.
Has anyone had a chance to look at his new charting method? It looks like he went EMR. That's real. What other things have you done to correct some of the deficiencies?
I did both the doctors come in webinar hearings. I actually had a doctor come in to come in and set up a new process. I'm revamped the EHR, hired an MA, went dual monitor systems. Everything that I learned from courses, which was actually very helpful. I've implemented.
Okay.
And I saw Dr. Rubin send a recommendation from last time, from my last visit.
So let me start off with Dr. Rubin, because she's taking the insight. Dr. Rubin, what's your thoughts on his current charting method?
Well done, doctor. If you're taking your health, consider patient care is a better quality product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree with Dr. Ruben. I think you made some changes that one should have. Are you utilizing that source of EMR? And even though some of it's cut and paste, are you still being careful of what you cut and paste and do automatically?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, there are templates that were made, right? There are templates with like every HR. But we have a little bit of time in our process, and I'm really slow in our process down by the year. Obviously, the world slows down too, so give us an advantageous time to kind of reach about the HR, which can be tricky, but it can be done too.
Okay. Let me go through with the board members. Let me start with you, Dr. Spatt. Hey, what's your opinion on this new charting methodology?
Well, I like it a lot. I definitely do that. I like it, so I don't have any comment on it.
Okay. And we heard from Dr. Rubin and Dr. Portillo.
No, I think there is a charting question there. That you wouldn't be able to maintain that level of charting?
No, not at all.
Ms.
Gowan,
significantly better.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Phil. Ms. Gowan, your thoughts?
I'm just listening right now.
Okay. Ms. Tidbit?
No comment.
And Dr. Campbell, your thoughts on his new charting?
They're exceptionally improved, and I concur with the physician members of the board. I have no other questions.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion that he was actually re-extended his initial interview, correct, Gail?
Yes, you put the investigation on hold. I'm sorry, you put the case on hold for further investigation. So it was the initial review.
Okay.
We're still in that phase.
Yeah. So, Dr. Drobel, as long as you keep this methodology you're using, keep this up, then I'll make a motion. I don't have a problem on missing that initial case. But I'm gonna need the rest of the board to give me their opinions.
Dr.
Campbell, second. So before we make roll call, does anyone want to add anything to this? No? Okay. You know, can you do roll call then?
Yes, Dr. Sadlick, just for confirmation, that was a dismissal?
Correct.
And Dr. Sadlick?
Yes.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gellman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you for pushing 22. And that wasn't easy, but I would have a hard time. We went another 3 months. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I get off the line now?
You can get off the line. Just keep up the chirping, please.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Let's move on to 5F, case number 20-157. And this is Dr. Jane Henders. Is Dr. Henders on the phone?
Yes, I am one of my attorney, Carmen Schmalhorn.
Okay. I'm sorry, your attorney's for name was?
Carmen Chanel Horn.
Horn, okay.
Yeah, in your origin.
Yeah, I'll have
Ms. Dampley
give us the introduction.
Board members, this complaint came to the board by way of mail with no name disclosed and no contact information. The complaint alleges respondent committed moral turpitude and provided a link to an iHeart podcast. On June 23rd, 2020, respondent participated in a podcast. During the podcast, respondent shared her opinion on wearing face masks. Respondent used the term board certified on her website. It was also used by the presenter of the podcast to introduce her as board certified. Respondent does not hold a specialty certificate by the board. The use of the term board certified may not be appropriate.
And Dr. Henders, I'm speaking for you.
So I'm going to answer your question.
Okay. So can you tell us, can you give a little bit of background on this mask issue?
Sure. On Sunday, I was asked by a politician person to, hey, do an interview with the T. Harris radio show. I wasn't aware who the person was, but she had sat in on a county public or through the public meeting on a Friday night. Actually, it wasn't public, it was private. So she was concerned that this county board of supervisors had this closed meeting on Friday night to do the county mandate over the mask, and asked if I would go over, you know, do this radio show for side effects, long-term health consequences of wearing masks, because she believed that the document that came out of the county moved into private business sector. So when it was first through the city of Phoenix, it was for government offices, that sort of thing. And she's like, you know, now it's in private businesses, now we're getting into employees wearing them many hours a day and that sort of thing. And she heard wants to interview you on the side effects of masks. So that's on Sunday, the interview is Monday morning. I didn't have time to write anything out or even give him an introduction, so I'm sure she passed on my website to him, and he pulled the introduction from that. And then I just had, really quickly, because I've been, like all of us, most doctors are looking over different things, different studies, watching videos, and pull on some stuff that I have looked at recently, and did the interview.
The board certified versus just licensed by the board. Did I hear the differentiation? Are you clear on that differentiation?
Yeah, I emailed Gail an example. So my website guy has just redid my homepage. On my own bio, I've always said licensed, went to the school and licensed. He used the term board certified, and it was, just when Gail has sent me that part of it, I thought, let me look at what you put on the homepage. And he did use board certified, and so I told him, hey, we're not supposed to use this. And then he sent me his website. He said, well, these websites were using it, just so you know, because I'm, looking at peer websites to help me with industry jargon. And so, he's just giving him another example of why. So that's where he got that from, and he removed it right away, because I told him.
So let me go through my list here. Let me start off with Ms. Gal and her.
I don't have any questions at this moment. Okay. I would like to address the board before.
I'm sorry, I forgot Carmen had a comment to make. Carmen wanted to make a quick statement after my summary.
Sure.
I guess if our primary concern was the use certified, and that has been taken care of. I don't think that it's all under the board's purview to regulate free speech outside of the patient consultation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my understanding, but let me ask Gail and Mr. Asker what their thoughts are. I would agree with what you're saying.
The board is regulating professional license, and the constitutional argument is followed by that review.
Do any other board members have concerns? Let's just stick to the license versus certified. Is there any other, which has been addressed, does anyone have any other concerns with this case that they want to let us know before we get
this? This is Dr. Popiola. I had one, I believe it's from Dr. Hendricks' website, regarding stem cell infusions and COVID-19. Is that something you're providing in your office?
No, I was never provided that, and after I received an email from AAMP on FDA statements, I've since removed that, but I've never given a stem cell ID. I have not treated any COVID patients at all during the pandemic.
Okay, no, my main concern is whether you're
providing
stem cell ID for COVID-19
information. Yeah.
Was that from the AAMP? With the COVID and the stem cell intervenience?
No, they had put out a notice to just a kind of a cautious to naturopaths about, you know, vitamin C ID for COVID and things like that. So I went back and checked our website to make sure that I didn't use that terminology, which I did with the stem cell, so I removed that off my service page.
Okay.
When I called. Yeah, just a cautionary letter about all of us.
And are you doing intervening
at themselves
then?
I haven't for over a year. I've done it in the past, but I haven't for a very long time.
Okay.
And it was never for COVID-19.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah.
Any other comments or suggestions, Dr. Staff? Dr. Rubin?
No.
Dr. Campbell.
No questions, thank you.
And Ms. Gale, I asked you, I believe, didn't I?
Yeah, I have just one last comment. Dr. Sanders, this is Karen. I thought that there's always discussions that are allowed in free speech and questioning and having sincere inquiry and exploration, and not just limiting the discussion of options that are out there and positive side effects. I just have to say that.
Okay. I'm coming from motion, and obviously, you know, your opinion is your opinion, Dr. Hendricks. Always, as you probably figured out, try to use your best judgment. But I'll make a motion that we dismiss this case number 2157.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We got a second, Gail. Can you do roll on this, please?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, let's move on to item number 6. We've made it through 5. Go through item number 6. And this is application for licensure. Joyce Aston. Is Dr. Aston on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Gail, can you give us just a history on that real quick?
So we have actually have two matters on the agenda for this particular individual. The first is an application for a licensure by examination. She has met all of the qualifications, and the board would need to approve that license.
So on item number six, is the board willing? She did fulfill her requirements for licensure. So I'd make a motion that we approve on item number six. We'll move to item number seven here in a moment. But on item number six, I would make a motion that we approve her licensure.
This is Dr. Popiola, second on the motion.
And can I do roll call, please? Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, motion carries for item number six. Item number seven is also with Dr. Ashton, so we'll need to have the others update on that.
Okay. So, board members, this complaint came to the board by way of several people. On 6/23/2020, the board received the first complaint from Melinda Lee. On 6/23, the board received the second complaint from Dr. Jacqueline Bain. On 7/13/2020, the board received the third complaint from Dr. Kristen Wing. And on 7/20/2020, the board received a fourth complaint from a person named Aaron. Additionally, board staff reviewed the internet at large and discovered references to the use of the protected title by Ms. Ashton Joyce.
So, Ms. Joyce, can you give us your feedback on this?
This is actually an email about Dr. Sedgwick. You can answer the recuse myself.
Okay.
Let me know
the...
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Next up, Dr. Rubin has recused himself from item number seven. So, basically, can you give us some feedback on the complaint that Ms. Anthony has just read?
Excuse me, Dr. Allen, this is Sarah. Do we need to redo the vote or item six? If Dr. Rubin needed to recuse himself on this matter?
That's a good point. Dr. Rubin, do you want to recuse yourself also on item number six, which was her licensure?
Yes.
Okay. So let's go back into, we still have four, obviously. We'll go back into item number six, noting that Dr. Rubin has recused himself on item number six. And this is for licensure. I'll make a motion. I'll restate my motion for her licensure.
I believe we need to make a motion to I don't know for the exact word.
Would you want to use your page number seven or?
No, I think you can organize what you're doing. I think that's fine. I'm trying to cancel out the last motion, the last item. We're just reopening it and you're revising and then doing that motion.
Okay. So I'll make a motion. We'll stick to number six and Ms. Ashton, let me know if you want redirected differently. I'll make a motion that she be approved for licensure in the state of Arizona.
This is Dr. Popiola, second that motion.
Can you roll call again for this?
I can. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
Okay, motion carries. Well, so happy to number seven. Yeah, I need to have you do this, but could you read that again for us?
Sure.
Give us the summation of that.
Sure. Board members, this complaint came by way of the board from several people. On 6/23/2020, the board received the first complaint from Melinda Lee. 6/23, one from Dr. Jacqueline Bain. On 7/13, one from Dr. Kristen Wing. And on 7/20, one from somebody by the name of Annan. Board staff reviewed the internet at large and discovered references to the use of protected title by Ms. Ashton Joyce.
Dr. Joyce, were you licensed when you were, let's look at complaint number one. Were you licensed at that point?
No.
Okay. How about complaint number two? Were you an officer because you just got licensed? Number three, the opportunity to all say the same. Was there any reason that you did not get licensure first and then go on and utilize the internet?
Well, just to be clear, I've not used the title NMD.
Now you're licensed in Arizona, so you know, you would of course now be under the rules of our body with respect to protected titles, but you're licensed, and so that's fine. Am I understanding all this correctly? And so you don't believe that even though you've used the title NMD since graduating, you're in a state that there's no legislative body, and so therefore you're doing what everyone else does, and you fall within the law, and now that you're licensed with Arizona, it essentially makes it a moot situation here. Is that what I'm getting from this?
No.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions that I have, and unless I'm missing something, I don't see that we really have anywhere to go with number seven. We've issued her a license, and so, you know, if it is true that now the paths aren't restricted with regards to protected titles in the state that she currently employed and working legally as a naturopath, and all other naturopaths in that and other states use their graduated titles for in those states, I don't really see where we've got a problem.
I appreciate that, Campbell. This, Dr. Boatfield, the issue is that the application is for an address in Phoenix, Arizona, and clearly stated on the Southwest College graduation information was do not use the term NMD, ND, etc. So it's kind of just a flying in the face of, hey, you know what, I'm moving to North Carolina and do whatever I want because I'm not going to fall under the jurisdiction. However, you also did apply with a naturopathic degree or a naturopathic license with an Arizona address. So it's just a gray area and a lack of professional conduct, in my opinion.
I agree with that.
I'm going to do what I want to do. Go ahead.
Yeah, so just so you know, before graduation, we all were taken in with, I'm totally thinking of her name right now, but everyone basically filled out their form for licensure before we even walked across stage. And that was done for everyone to have everything, you know, ready to go by the time boards had come around. So that's why I was living in Phoenix at the time. I quit everything at Phoenix. So it wasn't an intentional misrepresentation of where I am, where it was. I was in Phoenix when I filled out all that paperwork, and I was in SCNN when I did it, along with all my other colleagues.
This is Dr. Dutar speaking, and I'm, because she doesn't work here, and this is my license, that's why I have my legal counsel on here. It's very, very clear that the degree that she has is not recognized in the state of North Carolina. But however, because she's working here, this is my license, and I wanted to distinguish her from other practitioners that are not licensed and that don't have a degree, that don't go anywhere, but they get it from a mail order house. I told her that you should be somehow distinguishing yourself from the rest of the people that get a mail order degree or whatever it was. That's the reason she used it, and she never did use it from what I didn't understand. It was only on that petition. I don't know if it ran up anything about Instagram or whatever it was. It's a degree. The North Carolina Medical Board, they can't take away my degree if I aren't going to have more license. Now that's a different story. But the degree is my degree. You don't want to give somebody a license. That's one thing. You can't take away somebody's degree. You can't retroactively come back and say you haven't done your education.
Let me give you an example, sir. I'm an attorney, and you know, if I don't have an active license, I cannot write JD after my name, even though my degree is Juris Doctorate.
So that is not accurate because you can use your degree. You can issue a degree. You earn it. Licensure and a degree are two separate things.
Okay.
I just went over that with our legal counsel on a previous case. She is a doctor, but until she's licensed by the Naturopathic Medical Board, she's not an NMD to be able to represent that. The gray area is that this is. She wasn't licensed. She's in a state that doesn't recognize the naturopathic, you know, license. But it's definitely not a great look, and probably not very professional to have represented herself as an MMD prior to actually having a license. She can call herself a doctor, but she's not able to call herself an MMD in the state of Arizona. So it's a great area from where she actually moved to North Carolina and when she was representing herself on Instagram as an MMD.
And we also
can have
jurisdiction over international conduct. So regardless, if we come and meet under, the requirements of international conduct, we as a board have the authority to make those determinations.
Well, I'm just saying in the state of North Carolina, like a person that has a doctorate in education calls themselves a doctor too, but the medical board has no jurisdiction over that person or a PhD referring to themselves as a doctor. And I've fought the North Carolina Medical Board. And I'm trying to know that, but that's a matter of interpretation of law. Maybe that is in Arizona. I don't know, but she's not in Arizona. She's working underneath my license. That's why I'm on here.
If she's not in Arizona, does she need a license here in Arizona?
I think that we're planning on expanding our clinic to the West Coast and to a couple other places. So that's the reason I think that she decided to proactively back in June with.
Yes. Dr. Sablik?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
I'll say aye, but I'm going to add on, I just hope that there is some more caution in the future.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
Motion carries. Okay, let's move on. We'll move on to number 8, review the consideration of possible action regarding application for licensure from Brandon West. And, a rundown on that.
Okay. Board members, this is an application for licensure by endorsement, a provisional license for Brad West. Applicant disclosed a prior arrest that occurred in February of 1986 when he was 18 years old. Source documents confirmed the arrest. Applicant submitted an explanation of the circumstances surrounding the arrest. Applicant is licensed and currently practicing in the state of California. His license has been verified and is in good standing. His initial license was issued in California in September of 2005. Applicant did not take the MPLEX add-on examination of acupuncture. Applicant meets the requirements for licensure by endorsement with reduced scope. Pursuant to EO 2020 number 17, enacted on March 6, 2020, a provisional license shall be issued without jurisprudence examination. However, the examination is required to be completed within 6 months of the date of issuance. Approval of the application is requested.
Dr. West, are you currently practicing in both Arizona and California?
Arizona at that time, which is unforeseen. At this point, we have a thriving practice in California, and the parents are doing okay. What prompted the licensure move was the death of Mike Wilde, and we were interested in working with him and slowly progressing, moving over to Arizona once licensure was obtained, and that was all kind of future and set up upon his death because of the academy and clinic, which we hope to work out, and then thought maybe we just need to buy it. Families need to be open to that. So I'm very interested. It since hasn't happened, so we thought we'd just move forward with the Arizona license, keep it in good standing, and then hopefully within the next 2 or 3 years, relocate to the Tucson area and close the California practice.
And the incident that occurred was back when you, from what I'm reading, was
Dr. Sadluck?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Just for clarity, I had recused at the previous meeting and I'm recusing now.
Okay.
From the case.
Make up that Rubin's recused on number 9 with Stephanie Bailey. And did anyone, I went over this with Gail the other day, did anyone have concerns or changes
said that why not on the consent agreement for 70 million?
This is Holly Diesel, and Ms. Dr. Baylor's attorney, and she's on the line as well. We do have some concerns when it's appropriate for us to discuss this.
Let me ask the rest of the board members first if they have issues so we can try to get them all on the table. Dr. Baylor, on her consent agreement, did you have anything you read?
No, nothing at this point.
Okay. And Dr. Spatt, did you have anything that you want to add or delete from that consent agreement?
No, I don't have anything at all. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Allen, did you?
Not an interchange. That's the only thing that I would consider changing was that I didn't see it as like something specifically that the doctors that they see be like unencumbered their licenses, like that there's no discipline on the doctor's license, just to make sure that they're you know, good standing.
That they're expanding. Sarah, would we be able to add that to, or would that be just assumed that they're in good standing with the medical boards that they're on?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Sarah. Well, what I was going to suggest was, if the people have some significant changes, we could, rather than hammering them up here on the phone, you could give us guidance. And Gail and I can go back and rework the document. I just throw that out there at the outset. So you, once you understand that whether there's going to be material changes or significant changes, that we can go from that viewpoint as an option.
So we've got Ms. Gallen's point. Is one, I talked with Gail about some of mine, which appeared to have been worked in. And Dr. Campbell, let me move to you. Is there anything that you can bring to the table so that Ms. Asta and Ms. Hampton can work out with her attorney?
Yes, thank you. Before I begin, I would just like to thank you to Director Anthony and Attorney Asta for their hard work in creating this document and putting all of our strategies in action within it. And on their face, the document in its entirety. However, I do have a couple of initial concerns that I just want to throw out there to not to discredit any of the issues, but to try to make them workable in a more practical sense. And that is with regards to seeing a licensed psychiatrist once a week and then also seeing a licensed counselor once a week. With regard to the frequency of one time a week, and I don't know where the disposition, what city she would receive this in. As an example, in my community, the counselor, with that frequency would be very difficult every single week, and lasting for that to be an entirety of 6 months or an entire year. I agree that at first, we should make her see the counselor or the physician on a weekly basis, for a certain time period, say 3 or 4 weeks, and then have the medical professional deemed necessary or prudent, based on progress, if there's progress, they can further, expand that time period to maybe seeing the counselor once every 2 weeks or once or twice a month, you know, and maybe make that a little bit more workable and realistic. Some of the counselors here locally have several month waiting lists to get in to see them. And with the secondary mandates that we have for these medical practitioners to, you know, submit their documentation and their CVs and whatnot, I think we just need to be a little bit more workable and lenient with respect to how often and how competitive. I think that there should be progress. There's no progress. She goes into this, and, you know, after seeing the same counselor 4, 5, 6, 7 times, that if that counselor is feeling that she's making progress and that things are going well for her, that they should be able to acknowledge that progress, and that acknowledgement would come in the form of saying, okay, you know, I'm now comfortable with seeing her once a month or in that line. You know, and as long as their documentation and her progress align with that, and all of the other issues are met, and she says that seriously has no other issues, you know, that would be something I would be comfortable with if we progress, as we progress, that there's, I don't want to use the word relax, but that that we allow her to show progress and then what she's doing and not be so stringent over seeing two different doctors each once a week for an extended period of time. Because I believe that, you know, after so many times, you know, 15, 20 visits, there's going to come a point where it's no longer being effective, you know, especially if it's on a weekly basis. And so that's just my 2 cents worth, and that's all I have to add for right now. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Tibbetts, your thoughts on her consent agreement?
I don't have any additional comments.
Okay. Dr. Spatt?
No, I don't have any. Thank you.
And I think I already asked you, Dr. Perfield, did you have any additional viewpoints?
No, but after hearing what Dr. Campbell had to say, I'm not opposed to that as well. I'd like to hear what the proposals are from the respondents as well.
Okay.
Ms. Beasel, can you just within 3 to 5 minutes, because then it's going to be up to Ms. Asa and Ms. Anthony to draft up a consent agreement. Do you have anything that you'd like to say?
I do, thank you.
Go ahead.
And I'll be brief. First of all, there are some facts. I received this yesterday afternoon and was able to meet telephonically with Dr. Bailey. However, I have clients who attempted suicide at UCSO, and I couldn't reconnect at 9 o'clock last night or this morning because we had some things we had to deal with. So we have not had enough time to go through it, in my mind, enough for me to ascertain that the client understands it well and is appreciates all of the nuances of this and the requirements for compliance. So I need more time to do that. Second, there are some factual inaccuracies in this, in particular about Dr. Bailey's family member, and I think that the degree of detail and references to that are not appropriate. I think it's sufficient to talk about a history of trauma and so forth. I think it's not appropriate to provide that much information that normally would be information in a history that would remain confidential, or certainly in therapy notes that would remain confidential. I also concern whenever the board, following up on the board member's comment, I'm not sure it's appropriate, and I'm not sure a physician or a counselor ethically can agree to see a patient a predetermined number of times, regardless of the clinical status of the patient. I am quite sure that
most of the psychiatrists and counselors that I work with and represent would tell me they would not agree to do that and would not agree to provide reports on something that requires it. The reason is that the psychiatrist doesn't think it's clinically indicated. It would be unprofessional conduct for that psychiatrist to require the person to come and talk to them and charge them and then say, okay, well, I don't think you need to be here, but come and see me and pay me. Same with the counselor. So, Dr. Bailey remained in treatment with her treating psychiatrist and the treating therapist counselor who are in the same integrated behavioral health practice, which is always good because they're talking to each other and, you know, you don't have the gaps in the continuity of care. So I think that we need to work on language that would be acceptable and would say the board would say that she must be seen in compliance with her treatment plan developed by her psychiatrist and her counselor, must comply with that and must provide reporting, including a report, a statement of compliance from those two providers. And generally, a quarterly basis is what I see, just because it burdens the providers to do something more often than that, and they don't have much sometimes to say. This isn't like treating somebody with high blood pressure and seeing immediately a dose response curve, right? You give the medicine or you give the diet and the supplements and you see improvements that are measurable in a lab report. That's not the nature of behavioral health. And so the psychiatrist may need 3 or 4 sessions over 2 months or whatever frequency, and can't just it doesn't make a lot of sense to write a report saying there's no change and we can just continue to work on these issues. So I ask for her providers determination language that permits her, that requires her to be compliant with treatment recommendations of the providers and to provide reports on a quarterly basis with information from the providers at that time that she's in compliance and status report on her clinical test.
Okay. I agree with what you're saying, and I heard Dr. Campbell was also saying, I think at this point the best bet is to have Ms. Anthony and Ms. Asta draft this, and we'll probably at this point need to take one more peek at that, and that probably will not happen until October's meeting. But I hope that you'll be able to, you know, work with them and get this completed. I'm sorry, will you say something, Sarah?
Yeah, I'd like to ask members of the board if you could give us, I heard what Dr. Campbell said and Ms. Giebel, and so if you could give us some parameters for marching orders, if you will, as to what the board would like to see in the agreement so we, you know, to reduce the number of times we have to redraft.
Redraft, okay. Dr. Campbell, since that's your forte, can you phrase what you would clinically, since you work within that realm, what you would clinically feel would be relevant to put into this in reference? The only thing I'm looking for would be her psychological, mostly not psychiatric, but the counseling portion.
Well, respective to the psychological evaluation, I feel that if the board is going to tell her to see a psychiatrist, then we basically accept whatever the psychiatrist's findings are. If the psychiatrist wants to, or, you know, see her back, then we just accept whatever future that comes with, and then focus more specifically on the counseling end of it. And obviously, there's two separate issues here. We have somebody who experienced a strong degree of trauma in her younger years, and she's dealing with that. And then the board has the issue respective to the concerns out of what occurred during the incident. that day. And so our first view is essentially public safety to make sure that this does not happen again. And respected to that, I feel that if we simply language it that that she's mandated to see a counselor for a period of we can mandate a certain period, 4 to 6 months, and that she sees that therapist once a month in coordination with her other entities. She is working with her colleagues, and she has other therapeutic modalities that are taking place. And unless that therapist identifies issues that would make it prudent for her to be seen more, and we'll receive copies of the progress. So if on 7 months if the therapist says, we've got some major concerns here, I need to refer her back to the psychiatrist, or we need to see her, at an increased rate, well, then the board can handle that, when it comes up. But I think that mandating anything more than seeing a therapist, making it for a specific number of months, and not to mandate more than 1 time a month, it's going to be really difficult to put that into practice. I don't know how the board, builds machines or be a psychiatrist or just go right into a therapy aspect of it.
She has seen a psychiatrist. Okay. She has under psychiatric care.
Okay, that's right. And so I think we should just focus on the counseling aspect of it then. And then let the counselor work in coordination with the psychiatrist, let them work together. And as long as she provides, if she's seen, the counselor for maybe 6 visits and if they're going well, they're seeing progress, if she's being well managed, and there is no new reports or concerns or her conduct in any way, shape, or form, and then we can do a final reassessment maybe in 6 months to disposition the case then. That's really how I would think would be most realistic on a practical and professional side, is to mandate with her current care that she needs to see a counselor for a period of 6 months that's approved by the board. Somebody that we approve of that is taking a review, a professional review of the records that the psychologist will share with them, or the psychiatrist will share with them, and they work in coordination for X amount of months to determine that she is professional, stable, and that she has a plan executed to move forward successfully. And that is all of the written notes concern after a period of X amount of months. I think that we're going to move forward to the submission days with the other decisions made by the board.
May I ask a few questions, Dr. Bowers?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so as currently written, the consent agreement, the term information is 12 months. So to kind of, break it down, is that still what the board would like as 12 months, or I'm hearing maybe a shorter time now? I just want to be clear.
Yeah, I'm thinking 12 months. When you look at this whole case, the probation period has to be 12 months, in my opinion.
So, and then I think I can refer to all my questions by just saying, keep the language conforming as is currently drafted in the consent agreement, but the parameters just set forth by Dr. Campbell. Is that fair? that's going to be good. Do you want provisions pertaining to a psychiatrist in the agreement, or would you rather leave that and focus on the counselor?
My point of view is the psychiatrist itself, that language to remain, and then the counseling sessions, if the psychiatrist felt as though she needed more in-depth counseling or perhaps less, that he could make that determination. I just had a Dr. Campbell saying, but like somebody beyond the level of MSW or to come, i.e. a physician, psychiatrist, to be able to steer the course from here.
How frequent would you like the psychiatrist involvement?
Mr. Dollar, Dr. Bailey, how often are you seeing psychiatry now?
Dr. Bailey has been, has been seeing the psychiatrist weekly, but that's a change. And I think that's the critical issue, is that she sees the psychiatrist as he recommends and be compliant with his recommendations and adhere to medications that he prescribes. So that's the language that I would suggest is that he, is that Dr. Bailey complies with the treatment plan and says that what he has on the occasion is recommended by the psychiatrist and that he sees a counselor and as in accordance with counselor's recommendation.
This is Dr. Campbell. If you don't mind, if I could add, we could put in the language that she, again, just to echo what was just said, and that we received just a basic progress note from the psychiatrist at 3 months, and then again at 6 months. So we can focus our therapeutic intervention, let's say, for a total of 6 months. She's on probation for 12 months. In that 6 month period, she continues with a psychiatrist. At 3 months and at 6 months, he provides a report to the board on her progress. It can be very simple that she is in compliance with his recommendations, that they're still meeting with each other, that she, that her notes from the counselor, are appropriate, and everything is going good. And then, 3 months, and then again at 6 months. Disposition is on our account. They may see each other for years, but the disposition on our account, again, she continues to do well. I see no potential issues in the future, and I feel comfortable releasing her respect to the board to the oversight regarding her counseling. So that's our two letters that we get from her psychiatrist that show that she's continuing to go, that she's progressing, that there are no issues. If there are issues, and that's stated to the board, then we revisit it. Simultaneously, she's going for visits to a counselor or more, however, if the counselor, we can say a minimum of 6 unless the therapist deems more are necessary, at which time the council will let the board know. And then at the end of 6 months, they will provide a disposition letter as well. So the monthly chart notes come in, or the monthly notes come in, progress notes come in from the counselor. And then at 6 months, we get two letters, one from the psychiatrist, one from the counselor. They all see her, she's good. Then with respect to the mental health oversight, that is now put back in her lap as far as we're not directing that it continue, but it's back for her as an individual to, with her doctors, to determine if she moves forward. And then she has an additional 6 months on probation at that period. And then if there are any complaints, if there are any issues that come before the board, of course, we revisit everything then. That's just off the top of my head on how we could how we could keep track of the psychiatrist while mandating the therapist, and getting their progress notes at the same time, without, I don't feel that it would create any undue burden on the doctor's behalf. And so I'll leave it back open to more comments from everyone else.
Any of the board members have comments they want to add? And sir, did that pretty much give you a little bit of a different template to work from?
Yeah, thank you. I guess that the one follow-up question I have is the counselor will be submitting monthly reports or progress notes. And then at, in the 3 month and 6 months for sure, but at 3 months as well, we'll be submitting a similar report to the psychiatrist report at 3 months and 6 months.
Yeah, the psychiatrist will be at
6 months. Are you saying that psychiatrist every 3 months will be submitting the psychiatrist I'm referring to, not psychologist or social worker? But the psychiatrist every 3 months will be submitting reports back to the board.
Correct. Essentially, if you guys like my idea of 6 months of mental health oversight with a full 12 months of probation, then we would receive ultimately two letters from the psychiatrist. One 3 months that's going to outline everything that takes opposition, progress. Everything is going well, and they're linking up the counselor, things, you know, she's doing good professionally, there's no concerns, et cetera. And then the psychiatrist would then submit a final letter at 6 months, giving us a similar progress report. And then simultaneously, we're getting a monthly report from the counselor. She's getting seen monthly there. And notifying us of any issues, et cetera. And then a final letter at 6 months, drafting for overall progress. And that would end the board's mental health oversight component of the case. She would remain on probation for the remaining 6 months, and provided there are no issues, and provided that all those reports that we did receive did not identify a setback or any concerns that they would recommend that perhaps she come twice a month, or that we need to continue to review her professionally because they believe there's some concern as a result of whatever would happen, then at 6 months done, with the exception that she remains on probation to obey, you know, the rest of the mandate.
I'd like to see, because she'll be on a year's probation, so instead of two, I'd like to see three psychiatric reports and the one final one happening towards the end of her probation rather than two, because that gives her 6 months where you really don't have a good psychiatric profile.
Yeah, no, I could definitely understand why you would want that. And so in other words, she would need to progress with the counselor for those 6 months, and then she would continue on with that psychiatrist. You know, whether that psychiatrist deems appropriate that she see him or her every week or every 3 months at that juncture is really not the issue. It's just that at the end of 12 months, we want to see how everything is going, and we make our final determination to really relinquish her from probation at that point.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to see, because then he'll have to medically release her, but he'll know about her probation period. I mean, as Ms. Atkinson has. I don't want to keep beating this, but hopefully that gives us a little bit more room to rewrite this. I don't want this consent to bring this to drag on. So we'll need to probably come to closure on it, Mr. Bell, probably by, you know, in October. So like you have it done. Okay. I'd like to have it done and move.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Any more questions? Go ahead.
We'll be sure that we follow up with Ms. Anthony and your attorney and make every effort to get it more than, you know, less than 24 hours in advance of the meeting, so we have time to go back and forth with staff and your attorney.
Okay, I think what will happen eventually, and you probably know this, you've done this for a while, is the board will just give you X amount of time to do it, and if you don't do it, then it goes to formal, and you know the whole process from there. So, let's see if we can wrap that up in October.
I agree.
Thank you. Anything else on, with Stephanie Bailey, Dr. Bailey? In that case, I want to move on to number 10.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The fee waiver. I'm going to turn it back to our executive director on this.
Dr. Sal, members of the board, at the April 9th, 2020 meeting, the board voted to approve all board fees to be waived based on the executive order of 2020-17. On July 1st, we began fiscal year 2021. We've gotten through the renewal period of the certificates to dispense. And I believe that the board should consider repealing the waiver and reinstating all required board fees at the amount outlined in rule. The board has done a great service for the naturopathic community by waiving fees. I believe there are many grateful licensees and new applicants who appreciate the help during this time. So this time I'm requesting the board to approve the repeal of the fee waiver based on EO 2020-17 and reinstate all board required fees.
I'll make a motion to accept number 10.
Mr. Polio, I'll second that motion.
Dr. Sadluck? Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, board.
Number 11, do you want to take these separately, 11A, B, C, and D, or do you want to do one swoop?
Well, Dr. Rubin is going to have to recuse himself from letter C, and letter D we're going to need to take into consideration at the next board meeting because I did leave off August 13th on the title under the on the agenda, and so just to make sure it's clean and proper, I suggest we just put that on the next board meeting agenda. So we could take A and B and then do August 13th open session if you wish.
Okay. So I'll make a motion for 11A that we accept the July 9th meeting notes. Now I'll need a second.
Mr. Spoke, I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye. 11D, I'll make a motion for executive approval of the executive session draft minutes.
Mr. Spoke, I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
11C, noting Dr. Rubin recused, I'll make a motion to accept those draft minutes.
Dr. Popio, I'll second that as well.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
And 11, 11D, we will hold. Let's move on to number 12, and that will be the Executive Director Report.
And board members, did anybody have any questions on the ED report?
And I'll make a motion that we set the executive report.
Actually, there's no motion is needed.
No motion. Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone want anything on the future agenda items? Okay. Could we possibly fail and leave it as, and you can look into whether it's possible or not, but to have a third line available in case we had to move to a different line during these telephone times.
Yeah, I will look into what can be done regarding that. Thank you, everyone.